Hi, it's Callie, and you're listening to the 38th episode of the Hippie Haven Podcast. If you're new here, I release an episode every Wednesday related to living an ethical and eco-friendly lifestyle. Previously, I've covered topics like how to go zero waste, secondhand shopping, urban beekeeping, starting an eco-business, and so much more. If you haven't already, be sure to hit the subscribe button so you automatically get each new episode right when it comes out. Today's guest is Darren Willison of Coral Reef Alliance, and we're breaking down what's going on with the coral reefs, what the future looks like for coral reefs, and what you can do to make a difference.
What exactly are coral reefs?
So corals themselves are actually animals, and each coral is a colony of thousands of individuals called polyps. If you zoom in really close onto each polyp, they kind of look like tiny little anemones with tentacles facing up around a single mouth. And then below those polyps is a skeleton that's being formed by the coral animal. And that skeleton is what creates the hard structure of the reef. And then surrounding those structures built by corals are the thousands of other species that thrive because of the conditions created by those corals. And that is what we call the coral reef ecosystem.
And why are coral reefs dying?
So in order to answer that question, I've got to dive a bit deeper into coral biology. So bear with me. Corals have developed this symbiotic, which means mutually beneficial relationship with an algae called zooxanthellae. And this algae lives in the tissues of coral polyps, and it uses photosynthesis to provide nutrients to the animal. And that's actually what gives corals those amazing colors that you see while you're diving and snorkeling on a reef. So when corals are stressed from things like increased water temperature, they spit out that symbiotic algae. And when that happens, that white skeleton is exposed beneath what is truly a translucent, now algae-less tissue, and that gives it a bleached appearance. So that's where the term coral bleaching comes from. And a bleached coral is not dead, but we can kind of think of it as being in the ICU. So if conditions don't change and allow it to reuptake that symbiotic algae that feeds it, it will die. So that whole process, coral bleaching, is why climate change is the biggest threat facing coral reefs today. Coral reefs are really the ocean's canary in the coal mine. And just in last year, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is the IPCC, released a special report that predicted that we could see a mass die-off of 70 to 90% of existing coral reefs as soon as 2040 if we don't address climate change. And then this is exacerbated by the many local threats that coral reefs face, which includes pollution and unsustainable development, overfishing. These local threats basically lower the ecosystem's immune system. So just like us, a lower immune system makes us more susceptible to disease, or in this case, makes these corals more susceptible to bleaching.
How much of the world's coral reef is already dead?
So the combination of rising ocean temperatures and local reef threats have already resulted in 50% of our reef-building corals dying over the past 30 years. So those are reefs that are dead and we won't see come back in the way that we've seen them previously.
Now, what about the sunscreen that we wear? How does that impact the reefs?
Yeah, so recent studies have shown that certain chemicals found in sunscreen can damage corals' DNA, which has been shown to increase the occurrence of bleaching. This is definitely a problem, especially in tourist areas where chemical sunscreens are found in large quantities. But it's really important to keep in mind kind of the bigger context of reef threats. Sunscreen is damaging to corals, but the effects really aren't responsible for the massive loss of coral reefs that we've seen over the past decades. The real culprit there is climate change. So if we stop using sunscreen altogether today and we did nothing else, coral reefs would still be on this really, really bad trajectory. But these chemicals are a small piece of the problem, and we do have easy and accessible alternatives, so we should definitely use them. So my recommendation is to choose protective clothing over any sunscreen at all. That would be like hats or rash guards when you're out in the water. But if you're buying sunscreen, definitely avoid chemicals like oxybenzone and oxynoxate. there's a longer list of chemicals there that I won't even try to pronounce. But the best alternatives for sunscreen usually replace those chemicals with non-nano zinc oxide. And then I should also say that the Reef Safe labels are unregulated, so it's really important to look at the ingredients yourself and not trust those branding.
Oh, that is good to know that those Reef Safe labels aren't regulated. I'll have to look into that some more, and I'll add some more info about that into the show notes, maybe trying to find some good brands that we know are actually Reef Safe. So are there no organizations that are certifying that yet, or how is that working with the market? Do you know?
I think that there probably are some small, certifiers, and I think, there are some brands that I trust just from looking at the ingredients, and kind of knowing that they're doing the science behind it, but I don't know of any kind of government-regulated organizations that are doing those types of audits.
Okay. Well, I will definitely look into that more and add some info into the show note for our listeners. So you said climate change is the biggest threat, and that's what's killing off coral reefs the most. Can you dive deeper into how climate change is affecting them? You mentioned rising ocean temperatures. Isn't the temperature only raising by a couple degrees? How is that affecting the coral so badly?
Right. Yeah. So, like I said, coral reefs are kind of the canary in the coal mine here. The reason why that is because even though it's just a couple of degrees, that it's raising, you could imagine the oceans to be kind of like, our body temperature. So if our body temperature were to raise by a couple of degrees, we would be able to survive it for a couple of days, but it would really affect our immune system and end up kind of affecting our health, and it would be not the easiest thing to come out of. So just a couple of degrees sounds like a small thing, but in the oceans, it has a much greater impact. Also, coral reefs are found mostly at shallow levels of the ocean. So that's where you see the greatest warming. So they get affected more severely. Because of this increased water temperature, coral reefs have experienced 3 global bleaching events in recorded history. Global bleaching events are periods where the majority of the world's coral reefs are having that same stress reaction all at once. And these events have resulted in massive deaths. So the first one was in 1998. There was also one in 2010. And then the most recent one was from 2014 to 2017. So you can see they're becoming more frequent, and they're also longer lasting. So just to give you kind of a scale of the problem there, the most recent bleaching event from 2014 to 2017 killed nearly 30% of the shallow water corals in the Great Barrier Reef. And that reef, the Great Barrier Reef, is roughly the size of Italy. So that's kind of a massive, massive issue. That one was pretty widely publicized, which brought some attention to the issue. But of course, we've got a long way to go.
And are those global bleaching events, are those predictable? Do we know when the next one is going to be?
We can see, along with our El Nino events, which are climatic events that generally raise ocean temperatures, we can predict that they will coincide with those events. Really, they're going to become more and more common as we go forward with raising ocean temperatures.
And on the other side of climate change, how do coral reefs help protect people from the effects of climate change?
Yeah, so this is a really great question, because it's something that people often don't realize how much coral reefs do for us. So we know that climate change has led to an increase in extreme weather events and storms like hurricanes, typhoons, and tsunamis. Coral reefs actually act as natural barriers against these types of big storms because they break up the wave action before it reaches the coast. So without these coral reefs, we would definitely see more devastation to coastal communities as stronger storms head our way without those natural barriers to break them up before reaching land.
What happens if coral reefs do completely go extinct?
So this would really have huge implications, not just for coral reefs, but also for the communities and the other ecosystems that depend on them. Coral reefs support fisheries that are an important source of food for millions of people. Also, new compounds are being used in medicine that are sourced from coral reefs. Coral reefs also support the tourism economy. So if you think of your favorite beach getaway, it would look really, really different without a coral reef. Economists have also estimated that the value of coral reefs is over $375 billion a year. So that loss of coral reefs would really have untold consequences for both people and wildlife. And also because of their geographic location, the loss of coral reefs would have a disproportionate impact on the poor as well as developing and island nations. But we've done a lot of research that shows that corals can survive the effects of climate change. And that's only if we reduce emissions and we help corals adapt to warmer temperatures. So like I said earlier, the coral reefs of the future will look really different from the coral reefs of today, but we're really focused on maintaining that functional ecosystem so that they can continue to provide benefits both to people and wildlife.
And you work with the organization Coral. What is Coral's mission and what are you doing to help the coral reefs?
Yeah, so Coral is short for the Coral Reef Alliance. We're a nonprofit organization focused on uniting communities to save coral reefs. We were founded in 1994. Back then, we were just a group of divers who got together to try to stop the destruction they were seeing on their favorite reefs. 25 years later, Coral's focused on ensuring that corals survive climate change. So part of that means expanding the scientific understanding of how corals adapt to climate change. So we're using that science to develop regional scale conservation plans that'll give corals around the world the best fighting chance. We currently work in the Mesoamerican region, Fiji, Hawaii, and Indonesia. And in all those places, what we're doing is creating what we call adaptive reefscapes. Adaptive reefscapes are places where we work with local communities to reduce stressors like overfishing and water pollution and habitat destruction. So by addressing these local threats, we're in kind of increasing that coral immune system that I talked about before, and therefore survivorship, and therefore their ability to adapt to climate change. And the way we see it, if we can protect enough of these reefs in geographically strategic locations so that they're large, connected, and diverse, we believe we'll be able to see corals into future generations.
What can we do as individuals in our everyday life to help protect coral reefs?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because a lot of us, if we don't live right next to a coral reef, we can kind of have them out of sight, out of mind, which is unfortunate. But one of the biggest things that we can do is obviously reduce our carbon footprint. If climate change is the biggest thing affecting coral reefs, that would be the biggest thing we could do to help combat that. So that means reducing carbon and equivalent greenhouse gases like methane and nitrogen. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners know a lot of these kind of bullet points for how to reduce your carbon and carbon equivalent footprint. But one that I kind of have gotten behind is making sure that your diet is as carbon, as non-carbon intensive as possible. So what we eat has a huge impact on our carbon footprint. Animal agriculture is the leading generator of greenhouse gas emission, is a leading generator of greenhouse gas emissions. And also water pollution, deforestation, biodiversity loss. It's kind of staggering. So personally transitioned to vegetarianism about 10 years ago when I realized I couldn't really square being an environmentalist and a meat eater. So I would urge your listeners to try to make decisions that push them towards a more plant-based diet. And then there's other things, of course, transportation can help reduce your carbon footprint. The other thing that I will say is for coral reefs specifically, to engage locally. If you live by the coast, join beach cleanups. I go to these all the time here in San Francisco, and I realize that there's just a lot of value beyond the trash that you pick up. The other day I brought one of my friends to them, and she's not really an environmentalist, but as we were walking away from it, she was like, I'm never going to use plastic ever again. This was the, I think just kind of raising people's awareness and getting them to become kind of interested in environmentalism. And another way that you can engage locally is to give to highly effective nonprofits. So organizations like Coral, where I work, we're experts and we've been thinking about working on these issues for a really long time. So often the most effective way to help is by supporting organizations that are focused on doing this every day. A couple of other things that people can do that are really simple are kind of thinking about pollution and litter. I think that cigarette butts are kind of the last form of socially appropriate litter. So I think there's a lot we can do to change that. You know, you wouldn't see someone throw away a chip bag, but you see people throw their cigarette butts all the time. And they might not realize that those cigarette butts are actually really damaging to our oceans and our water. And as your listeners know, reducing plastic consumption is really important. This can be familiar things like grocery bags, straws, takeout containers. But then there's always taking it a step further, like buying in bulk with reusable containers, eliminating plastic wraps, Ziploc bags, those types of things. And I kind of think of all these things as small votes that we get to do every day, not just with our dollars, but with our time and with our support and with our voices. So it's really easy to forget that everything we do counts, but it really does. And it inspires others to make more conscious choices too. So, yeah.
And by the time this episode comes out, there will have already been an episode published on how to organize a community trash cleanup, whether you live by a beach or you just want to pick up trash in your neighborhood. So for my listeners, I encourage you, if you haven't listened to that one yet, to go back and listen to it. That is definitely a good place to get started. And I 100% agree with you on trying to reduce your carbon footprint, especially with the food choices that you're making. And, you know, a vegetarian or even a vegan diet is one of the most effective things an individual can do to lower their carbon footprint. But for people who do still eat meat, specifically who do still eat fish and seafood, with overfishing being a contributor to coral reefs dying, are there more sustainable choices that you can make regarding the consumption of seafood to help limit how it's affecting coral reefs?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that we've seen in our industry that's been really, really helpful is the Monterey Bay Aquarium put out a separate initiative called Seafood Watch. Essentially they go and they audit different fisheries and make sure that they're using sustainable practices for picking the right species, using sustainable fishing methods, and those types of things. So it's really hard as a consumer to get that information, but Seafood Watch has an app, and I think they've got an online platform, and there's some kind of printed materials that you can bring with you in your wallet for when you're heading to the grocery store. So if you do choose to eat specifically seafood, definitely really important to make sure you know where it's coming from. And the best way to try to do that, as far as I know, is through the Seafood Watch information.
And is individual action enough to save coral reefs?
So as far as individual, yes, I think all of us kind of have a part to play in this, right? We have to really push our society to be better about reducing our carbon footprint. We have to hold ourselves accountable to the ecosystems that kind of keep us alive. Absolutely. Like any other environmental issue, these are big things that we have to figure out how to tackle together. But, you know, these big things are just made up of individual people when it comes down to it. So
do you guys have any experience or background with, instead of just legislative, but maybe even just with corporations, getting corporations to, you know, reduce their pollution or be more sustainable and how that specifically impacts like ocean pollution and coral reefs? Do you have any experience with like, should individuals be boycotting certain corporations? Do you have any tips for contacting them?
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of the way that we've engaged the private sector is through kind of getting them involved in philanthropy. So we have started to work with not really big corporations, mostly they're small businesses, but small businesses that want to have a philanthropic arm to the work that they do. So a lot of times this will look like, you know, a business that sells kombucha, they want to give $2 for every bottle of this one flavor to Coral Reef Conservation. And I'll help to kind of set that up and make sure that they can engage in that way. So those are small partnerships, small businesses trying to get engaged in the same way that an individual would.
And that's a wrap. If you find value in the Hippie Haven podcast, please share it with someone you know who'd be interested. You can also leave a review in iTunes or whichever podcast app you're using, and please consider buying me a virtual cup of coffee to keep me going. Each podcast episode takes around 6 hours to create, and episodes cost at least $50 each out of my own pocket. These costs include file hosting, editing, transcription for people who need or prefer content, and my own time of researching, drafting, recording, proofing, and promoting. Visit buymeacoffee.com/Callie, that's C-A-L-L-E-E, to support the work I'm doing with a $4 cup of coffee. Thank you all from the bottom of my heart for spending this time with me. I hope you have a great rest of your day.